The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Because it was locked down, I wasn't doing anything in the evenings. And so I was able to write day after day after day, and I got into a real flow and I enjoyed it a lot. And I think it taught me a lot as well, because now I could do that for my next book. I don't have to fit it in piecemeal. And I think my writing journey has been a journey of garnering more respect for what I do and not thinking like, oh, I've just got to put it in elsewhere and not place any demands on anyone else's time. Whereas now I ring fence allotted writing time for myself, and that's really helped.
And welcome back to The Writer Files. I am still your humble host, Kelton Reed, wishing you pages, patience, and perseverance per usual. Award-winning author and broadcaster Elizabeth Day talked to me candidly about how to fail, hanging out with Gloria Steinem, genre equality, and how she wrote her compeller, Magpie. Elizabeth's a novelist, lauded journalist, and host of the chart-topping podcast How to Fail, which has featured guests including Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Gloria Steinem, and Brené Brown. Her latest novel, Magpie, was published in the UK in September 2021 and became an instant Sunday Times bestseller. Described as a taut, psychological suspense novel about a perfect couple and their seemingly perfect roommate, bestselling author Matt Haig called it a clever, suspenseful read with a brilliant central pivot. Elizabeth was a staff feature writer for The Observer for 8 years, and her writing has appeared in The Telegraph, The Times, The Guardian, New York Magazine, Vogue, Grazia, Elle, and Vanity Fair. She's also a contributing editor to Harper's Bazaar. In this file, Elizabeth and I discussed how failure makes us human, cooking pasta for Stanley Tucci, why we don't call Jonathan Franzen a domestic thriller writer, writing about the struggles women go through to become mothers, booking an Airbnb to finish her book, and a lot more. Stay calm and write on. And don't forget, you can always support this show by heading to writerfiles.fm, where you can also sign up for email updates, get links to merch, and other resources for writers. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click follow to automatically see new interviews in your podcatcher as soon as they're published, and drop us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to help other writers find us. And we are rolling once again on The Writer Files, and I am honored today to be joined by best-selling and award-winning author and podcaster Elizabeth Day is joining us. Elizabeth, thanks for taking the time to do this. Where are you? Where on earth are you?
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I think I'm in London. I'll just check outside the window. Yes, I am. So okay. I'm in my home in South London.
And how are you feeling given the that today is the US publication date of your latest? How are you feeling about everything?
I'm feeling thrilled and nervous, I think. I love the States, and I spend a lot of time on the West Coast in LA, and I always feel that I am the best version of myself when I'm there. And I have always wanted my books to be published for that particular audience. And so it's a real privilege to think that Magpie will soon be on the shelves. And I think as well, I mean, maybe you could tell me if this is right or not, but I think that I write in quite a filmic way. And I always think quite visually and cinematically as I'm writing. I kind of visualize a scene first. And obviously, LA being the home of Hollywood and America just generally having been so much a part of my cultural education growing up, it really just is such an honor. So yes, thrilled and excited and a little bit nervous and apprehensive too.
Yeah, and as you said, that cinematic quality of your work translates probably quite well to any size screen. But talk a little bit about, do you have an adaptation that works presently? You were talking about visiting the States, and I'm sure that you've been courted by Los Angeles and Hollywood.
Well, that's very generous of you. I do have a few adaptations in the works. So Magpie has been optioned, but actually by a UK production company. And The Party, which was my previous novel, has been optioned. And there's some super exciting stuff happening there that I can't talk about. And then How to Fail, which, so you mentioned earlier, I've got a podcast called How to Fail, which is all about what we learn from failure. And I interview people every week about three times they might have failed in life. But I also wrote a memoir off the back of that called How to Fail, Everything I've Ever Learned from Things Going Wrong. And that I am attempting to adapt myself into a kind of dramedy, basically. And that's been a fascinating learning process because I've never written a script before. So as much as I consume a lot of film and TV, I'd never actually tried writing it. And it's been a really steep, but ultimately enjoyable learning curve.
Yeah. And going back to the podcast, you've got this chart-topping podcast that has been around, I think, for what, 3 or 4 years now?
That's right. I launched in July 2018, so almost 4 years.
And it's a pretty amazing show. And congrats on the success of the podcast. You did come from a broadcasting background, is that correct?
I actually came from a print journalism background. So I was a Sunday newspaper journalist for, I think, 16 years. Like, I went straight into that after university. And I worked, as I say, exclusively for a kind of weekly paper, various different kinds. And I was often sent to interview celebrities who had something to promote. So if anyone listening has ever seen the film Notting Hill, starring Hugh Grant and Julia Roberts, there is a very famous scene in that movie about a movie junket where journalists are just sent to ask the same questions of the film stars. Like hour after hour. And I did a lot of that kind of stuff. And I just realized after a while that all of the interviews that were printed were focused on success and achievement. And after a while, I got quite tired of that kind of journalism. And I quit my job and I went freelance. And this coincided with a tumultuous time in my personal life. So I got divorced. I got into a new relationship that failed. And I felt like a failure in my personal life. And so these two things kind of came together where I was like, wouldn't it be interesting? Because failure is actually what makes us human. It's a sort of shortcut to understanding who someone is, I think, when you talk about the stuff that went wrong. And I was yearning to do a kind of more broad type of interview. And so the idea for the podcast came about. And then I launched it in July 2018 with no expectation. And I have been so thrilled and pleasantly surprised to see what a chord it struck with other people, because I think everyone wanted to talk about vulnerability. And off the back of that, I got some broadcast jobs. So it was that way around. So as well as writing books, I also do these other things.
Okay, that's cool. How they kind of dovetail into one another.
Yeah.
And of course, you are an award-winning novelist and a best-selling author. And your most recent is Magpie.
Yes.
And as of the publication of this show, it will be available in store. So yeah, it's pretty fantastic. You know, all of this press that you've gotten has been you know, you got some rave reviews, and so it would seem that both the podcast and kind of the relationships that you've made there have kind of bolstered some of the relationships that you've made in the writing world. But yeah, I thought it was cool that, you know, not only are you like rubbing elbows with people like Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Clarice Steinem and some amazing authors like Kazuo Ishiguro and Malcolm Gladwell, Brené Brown, you know, that your colleagues are kind of coming out of the woodworks also to talk about your latest. And and how do you know Stanley Tucci? I see that he blurbed your book as well.
So, yes, I am incredibly blessed that I get to meet all of these people through doing the podcast. And again, I set it up without expectation. And because of all my time as a journalist, I had got some contacts. So I was able to kind of pull in some favors for the first 8 guests who were kind of friends or contacts. And Phoebe is a dear friend of mine. And she agreed to be my first guest. So that's a pretty great first guest to have. And so I was very lucky. And then How to Fail just snowballed. So people would come to me, and quite often, because I am an author, a book publicist would come to me and say, okay, so Gloria Steinem's got her new book out. Would you be interested? At which point the only answer is, yes, she is my hero. And so that's how that all happened. And I think because the construct of How to Fail is that we are being our authentic selves. And so it's a shortcut to quite a deep friendship if you get on with someone. And so I met Lisa Tadeo through doing How to Fail, and she's become a very good friend. And she was actually, I think, the earliest reader of Magpie after my agent and editor, and gave the most phenomenal quote. And I'm so grateful to that. I like to think it would have happened anyway, like hopefully the writing stands on its own merits. Yeah. But Stanley Tucci came about in that way because he had his wonderful memoir Taste coming out, and I was offered him for the podcast. And he is married to a phenomenal woman called Felicity Blunt, who is a brilliant literary agent. And so again, we sort of knew each other from the literary scene. And then Stan came on the podcast and we got on really well. And they live down the road from us, and we ended up going for dinner. And then they've come round to ours for dinner. And my husband, who's half Italian, was brave enough to cook for Stanley Tucci. He cooked pasta for Stanley Tucci. And it was so good. It was honestly like the best pasta he's ever made. That Stan took some away in a little Tupperware box the next day to take back to set. So
no kidding.
Yeah, they are great people. And it all just comes about from interviews, basically, and sort of connecting with people on that kind of level.
Well, as we talk about so often on this show, you know, publishing is a business of relationships and people, and it's all very people driven, and it's not a huge world, but it is pretty fantastic that you've had the opportunity to rub elbows with so many famous authors, of course, and that interview with Brené Brown, by the way, was pretty amazing. Congrats on that one, as I'm also a fan. But I thought, and of course, Matt Haig blurbed the book and said that Magpie is a clever, suspenseful read with a brilliant central pivot. And congrats on the work. We're calling it a taut psychological suspense novel about a perfect couple and their seemingly perfect roommate. That is, until she threatens to destroy everything they've worked so hard to create. Talk a little bit about, you know, how you came to the psychological thriller, and, you know, as I've heard them called at times, you know, has it been called a domestic thriller or even an emotional thriller?
Yeah, I have an issue with those terms, actually, because I don't think they'd be applied to a male author. And I feel like the term domestic is so narrow in scope. And essentially, Jonathan Franzen, who I admire more than I can say, he writes a lot of domestic novels, but they are pitched as State of the Nation. And the only thing that's different there is the gender of the author. So I'm not comparing myself to Jonathan Franzen at all, but I do think that we live in a culture that is so keen to categorize things and people. And so Magpie does have thrilling elements. But by the way, this is absolutely not a criticism of you at all. It's just a thing that I have observed. Magpie absolutely does have elements that I hope are thrilling to read, but it's not a conventional thriller in the sense that there aren't dead bodies, there isn't a grizzled detective. And also, I have such respect for thriller writers, and I think they're really hard to do well. And I don't think I'd ever set out to write one, because I think they're very complicated structures to get right. That's to say that I think Magpie is a blend of lots of different genres. So It does have thrilling aspects. It does have a relational aspect, and most of it takes place within the four walls of one house. And I did that quite deliberately because I wanted it to feel claustrophobic, and also because I wrote most of it during lockdown when I was trapped within four walls myself. But I've come up with a new term, which I'm really happy with, which is a compeller. So I think Magpie's a compelling read, but the reason I shy away from calling it an out-and-out thriller is because I don't want people to be disappointed if they pick it up and they're like, oh, well, hang on a second, or where's the dead missing girl? Because it's none of that. But the reason that I came to it is because, actually, unusually for me, so Magpie is my fifth novel, and with every single previous novel, I have always started with character and with voice, and I have started writing a character without really knowing where I'm going to go, and then I sort of discover the plot along the way. But with Magpie, there were themes that I wanted to write about. And one of the major themes is, you mentioned there, the idea of the quote unquote perfect life, which is of interest to me because of my podcast work as well, like what that actually constitutes, but also fertility. I have my own experience of infertility and of trying and failing to have babies. And I've been through lots of different kind of treatments and IVF and all sorts. And I felt that I had never seen that experience reflected in fiction in the way that I might have liked when I was going through it all. So I knew that I wanted to look at that. And then it was about finding the characters who could best embody what I was trying to achieve. And as I talk about that theme, it's that, you know, it can be quite an uncomfortable theme. And if you haven't been through it yourself, you wouldn't necessarily want to pick up a book that is all about infertility. So I wanted to sweeten the pill. I wanted to make it accessible and unputdownable. And I wanted to get my message across, but by using the construct of this book that you really want to find out what happens next. And for me as a reader, one of the most satisfying plot devices is a twist. And so Magpie has one major twist halfway through and lots of other like mini twists along the way. And I really wanted to make that a good reading experience because I love it as a reader myself. And so my aspirations there were to do a twist as good as Gone Girl. And I think Gone Girl is just such a brilliant example of this kind of genre where you're so compelled to keep on turning the page. And it's also saying something important about womanhood. So those are my rather lofty aspirations. And that's how I came to this sort of genre.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought what The Guardian wrote was pretty nice. A tense, ultimately cathartic psychological drama. Day's cleverness lies in fashioning from these ingredients. A pacey, stylish thriller in which suspense is accompanied by a fist-pumping feminism.
Yay!
And perhaps toughest of all, hope. And of course, you have to feel pretty good about getting that point across. And yes, of course, I stumbled into the trying to categorize the book as so many authors, you know, and that's why I asked the question, you know, what are you calling the book? Because, you know, I know that publicists and of course, marketing teams can often try to spin something. And then the author has a kind of a little bit different twist on it.
Yeah. Well, and I so appreciate the question. And I also so appreciate it when readers come to this book because they are intrigued by the thriller label. It's just that I don't want anyone to be disappointed. So, yeah, so there are no dead bodies, but otherwise I hope it's riveting.
No spoilers. But so let's talk about your process because you've talked about it at length in some interviews and I always find you know, the process of, you know, not only probably are you juggling a lot of things over there between the podcast and doing press and of course trying to keep up with your fiction, but talk about kind of how you find the time to get pages and kind of what your most successful and prolific period kind of feels or looks like.
Yes. So my routines, such as they are, have really changed over time because when I wrote my first three novels, I was a full-time journalist. And so I had to write my fiction in and around my full-time job. So I would write during my lunch break. I would write at weekends. And I got very used to writing in cafes because of that. And then I came to rely on that and I really enjoyed the murmur of other people's voices because writing can be such a solitary activity and you can spend so much time in your own head that for me, I liked being around other people within reason. And then when I went freelance, I had more freedom in my own life to write when I wanted to. And that coincided with a period of time when I went to live in LA for a few months. And again, I still wrote in a cafe. I actually wrote in the patio of Coffee Bean on Hillhurst, if anyone knows that that place. And it's, you know, as an English person, there was just nothing more luxurious than being able to type in the sunshine. And the only routine that I had was that every time I sat down, I would order a mug of green tea and I would have to write 1,000 words. And it didn't matter how long it took. And it also crucially didn't matter how good or not I thought they were. I had to sort of suspend judgment while I was writing them. Because as you know, the great thing about writing a book is that you can go back the next day and edit those 1,000 words. But one of the most important things is getting actual words on the page that exist and you can then move around. But with Magpie, as I briefly mentioned, because I wrote most of it in lockdown, the joy of the cafe was denied to me. And for 6 weeks, I couldn't write. And I, you know, the world was going through a collective trauma. And that was part of the reason that I couldn't do much other than watch Tiger King. But after 6 weeks, I decided that I would set up a cafe in the spare room of our house. And so I would make myself a cup of green tea. And every evening, and it was always the evenings, I'd never written in evenings so much before, but every evening from 5 to 7 p.m., I would go and lock myself into our spare room and I would play coffee shop ambient sounds on YouTube. And I would put my phone on airplane mode and I wrote. And it was a real golden hour for me. And because it was lockdown, I wasn't doing anything in the evenings. And so I was able to write day after day after day. And I got into a real flow and I enjoyed it a lot. And I think it taught me a lot as well, because now I could do that for my next book. I don't have to fit it in piecemeal. And I think my writing journey has been a journey of garnering more respect for what I do and not thinking like, oh, I've just got to put it in elsewhere and not place any demands on anyone else's time. Whereas now I ring fence allotted writing time for myself. And that's really helped. And the final thing that I'd say is that I still do the 1,000 word count, by the way. But at the beginning and ends of books, if I can, I really like to go away somewhere and to book an Airbnb and just be in my own headspace for at least a week where I can just do that and only that. So it's really about carving out and ring fencing time for myself now, because I do so many other things and they all fall under this arc of human connection, but it's very important for me to pay respect to my writing by sheltering the time that I need for it.
I think that's pretty great and pretty important. And it just speaks to the fact that, you know, no writer does it in the same way, really traditionally, and there's no need to any longer. You know, we don't live in a 9-to-5 world. You know, everything's distributed and remote and accessible, you know, at the push of a button.
Exactly. And I think that a lot of wannabe writers possibly get put off by the idea that they have to have these strict morning routines that involve meditation and doing your morning pages and making a matcha latte and lighting a candle and getting up at 5:30 a.m. That can feel quite overwhelming when you're faced with a blank page. And so I'm a huge advocate of just doing it. As a famous sportswear brand once said, but just doing it and trying to suspend your inner critic for the length of time that it takes you to write a certain number of words.
Well, before we wrap up with your advice to your fellow scribes on how to keep going, yeah, well, it sounds like you're a tea drinker, so I won't ask you the coffee or tea question.
I used to drink coffee, and I was borderline addicted to it, and then I gave it up for health reasons. Because of the fertility stuff that I was talking about, I gave it up. Yeah. And for 2 weeks, it was hideous, and now I am like an inveterate green tea snob. So I love, my favorite tea is jasmine tea, because it gives me as close to a caffeinated buzz as I can get, basically.
I love jasmine tea. Of course, I'm a coffee addict, but I tend to drink I tend to titrate the decaffeinated and caffeinated grounds as I go.
Oh,
so
I start
like with 3/4 caffeinated, and then I move slow down to like a 1/4 caffeinated cup of coffee.
Life is balance. I mean, that is a very Buddhist approach to coffee.
Maybe. I hadn't thought of it like that, but now I will. My Buddhist coffee consumption. Well, yeah. So if you could have dinner with any author from any era to your favorite spot in the world, who would you take and where would you take them?
Oh, I live for this question. Okay. I would take William Thackeray, who wrote Vanity Fair. I would take Elizabeth Jane Howard, who I don't think is that well known in the States, but she wrote a series of books called The Cazalet Chronicles, and she was married to Kingsley Amis, and she kind of put her writing career on hold while she was married to Kingsley Amis. And I think as a result, she's rather overshadowed by that reputation, by the fact that she was Martin Amis's stepmother. But her writing is amazing, and I think she'd be really fun as well. Tom Wolfe, Bonfire of the Vanities was a really seminal book for me because I was a journalist at the time that I read it, and I just realized what he had done with that prose style was take the kineticism of journalistic reportage and put it into fiction. And I just thought it was genius. Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, Americana, is one of my favorite novels. And also she would dress so beautifully that I just want to see what outfit. Meg Mason, who wrote Sorrow and Bliss, has actually become a real life friend of mine. And I already know that she's a wonderful companion. So I'd like her as well. I'm just trying to think if there's anyone that I'll kick myself for not choosing. Oh, can I have like Plato? Could I?
Of course.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
You should have Plato.
Okay. I'm going to have Plato because I just want to ask him, you know, how to live and how to be. and I love the Republic. And, actually, I'm going to have Kazuo Ishiguro. You mentioned that I had him on a podcast, and I really adored that conversation, but I've never met him in real life. We did a remote audio only recording. So I would really value the chance to meet him. And I would take them all to, I'd take them to Little Dom's on Hillhurst in Los Feliz in LA, or I would take them to Claridge's for like drinks in Claridge's bar. I think that would be fabulous.
Lovely. That sounds like quite a party.
You can come too.
Oh, okay. Wow. I would love to be a fly on the wall for that interaction. To see especially how Tom Wolfe and Plato would get along.
I mean, it would be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, probably famously after a few drinks, a few glasses of wine. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Of course, the latest is Magpie. We will link to the book. We will link to your home base there, which is elizabethdayonline.co.uk. We'll drop a link there. You're on all the socials, and those can be accessed via your website, it looks like.
Yeah.
Pretty easily. Is there anything else you want to leave us with before you drop a pearl of wisdom on writers?
No, I just want to thank you so much for having me and making the time. You know, you have amazing guests on your podcast, and so it's a real joy to be on this virtual bookshelf with them. So thank you for having me.
Well, we are honored, and we appreciate your wisdom and your time. So just maybe your advice on just how to persevere through tough times or good times.
What I would say is that I firmly believe the reason we are put on this earth is to become the youest version of you, the usest version of us. There is no one else on this big wide planet who has your set of experiences or your characteristics or your particular vision of what life is. And that's a beautiful thing. And anytime you doubt yourself, you might doubt the execution of your craft. You might doubt that you're not as good a writer as Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, but put that out of your mind as much as you can, because no one else has your particular set of experiences. So therefore, no one else can write like you can. And it is worth pushing on through in order to share that with the rest of us, because it will make the rest of us think and see differently.
I love that. Thank you for your enlightened take on all things writing, the writing life. Of course, we will point out the fantastic podcast as well. Check out How to Fail with Elizabeth Day. everywhere that podcasts can be downloaded. So yeah, again, thank you for your time and for your wisdom.
Thank you so much, Kelton.
It's been a pleasure. Oh, and come back in the future.
I absolutely will, if you'll have me.
Thanks so much for joining us for this file. And if you're a fan of the show, simply head over to writerfiles.fm for more. That's writerfiles.fm.